From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Another busy day here in Washington, D.C. The Office of Management and Budget Acting Director Russ Vogt was on Capitol Hill today presenting the Trump administration's budget. Vogt described the Trump budget as requesting more reductions to both discretionary and mandatory spending than any other president in history. What does that mean for you? Well, Texas Congressman Michael Burgess, who is the leader of the Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health, is here with the highlights of both the overall budget and the budget as it pertains to actually one of the biggest budgets, that is the Health and Human Services. And another Army general that appeared to target chaplains has had the tables turned on him and now finds himself in the crosshairs of what is likely to be a career-ending investigation. Christina Wong, a correspondent at the Pentagon for Breitbart News, will be with me in just a moment with the details. And for those who did not have a chance to weigh in yesterday on our discussion about the rise of socialism's popularity with younger Americans, we return to the topic today with more discussion of Democrat Socialist Congresswoman of New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Her comments this weekend at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin. So we'll be taking your phone calls a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, let me remind you that we're going to be talking about this a lot, and that is the initiative to end birthday abortion. Now, the current leadership in the Congress is refusing to have a vote on the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act. There is a discharge petition which will be ready to for signatures probably the first week, second week in April. 218 signatures are required by members of Congress for a vote to take place on that bill. Now, there are 197 Republicans in Congress, and based upon my conversations, all 197 will sign the discharge petition. That means you need 21 more signatures, meaning that there will have to be members of the Democratic Party will have to sign in Congress that discharge petition. We need to send a strong message. And to do that, we're sending 90,000 baby hats to Nancy Pelosi so she cannot miss this issue. If you want to be a part of that, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, we're going to be joined in just a little bit by Dr. Michael Burgess of Texas, but they're still in committee. Committee's running late. So I want to go on to this other topic, which is a big topic. In a Breitbart news piece, which you can read, by the way, at TonyPerkins.com, Pentagon Inspector General is investigating allegations that a two-star Army Major General Kurt Sontag is retaliating against active-duty Green Beret instructors under his command who have voiced concerns over his lowering of standards for Green Beret candidates. Now, this is the same general that in 2018 went after a Baptist chaplain, Chaplain Scott Squire, for simply refusing or saying, I can't conduct same-sex marriage retreats. That's because he is a Southern Baptist and he could lose his accreditation with the Southern Baptist, meaning he can no longer be a chaplain. Well, General Sontag went after him. After a lengthy investigation, the chaplain was exonerated. But it appears now that these tables are being turned for other activities that this general is engaged in. By the way, it's not the first time a general like this has been caught up in controversy. Joining now to talk about this, Christina Wong. She is a Pentagon correspondent for Breitbart News and has covered this story extensively. Christina, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Your piece was quite lengthy. You go into great detail. It looks like General Sontag is in some hot water.
Yes. So three separate sources confirmed to me that he is under the Pentagon Inspector General investigation. I've confirmed this with people who've actually spoken to the Inspector General, their office. So that's how I know. And essentially, he's being investigated for allegations that he's retaliating against students who have spoken out against his policies. One student wrote an email detailing things he was concerned about going on at SWCC, which is the school that Sontag is the commander of. And he had his special forces tab revoked and was sent back to the Army. But that was just the surface. After that email was sent, there's just been a slew of other retaliatory acts against other Green Berets, other cadre firings, non-judicial punishments. Two instructors, he gave them both Article 15 non-judicial punishments, and they tried to fight it, and he withdrew them and instead gave them a general order memorandum of reprimand, which you can't fight, and that triggered their discharge from the Army. So in some months, they will be out of military, and this is a career that they love, and they've devoted more than a decade of their lives to.
Now, in your article, you detail quite a bit, coming from instructors, how the qualifications have been lowered, in fact, oftentimes completely eliminated, which obviously has an impact upon the readiness and the qualifications of those that are serving in our special forces there at the U.S. Army John F. K. Special Warfare School. Now, but one thing that really caught my attention and how we, Sontag, kind of came on our radar is that, and you have this in your article toward the end of your article, that he went after a chaplain at the beginning of 2018, which was really kind of the first time to put him on the radar. And I think part of this scrutiny began to turn to him. And as the curtain was pulled back, a lot of stuff has been found out that, quite frankly, questions his leadership ability there in the Army. And it appears that he could be on his way out as well.
Absolutely. As with the chaplain case, he sounds like a toxic leader who retaliates against people who get in trouble or make him look bad. One story that several people told me was that, after that initial email came out, he called a formation of instructors, civilian and military, took off his top, his uniform top, and confronted, students and asked if they would, fight him or come up to him, face to face and voice their concerns to him right then and there. And he also said that the email was punishable by death, which really hurt some of the cadres. I think, your commander is someone who's supposed to look after you, you're supposed to look up to, and you had this guy singularly focused on punishing whoever wrote the email, whoever was associated with the email. And there were hopes at first that the email was going to shed light to some of the problems at SWCC, but unfortunately, it appears that he focused mostly on going after folks under him.
So, Christina, what response have you received so far as your article has been out there detailing this long laundry list of problems related to General Sontag?
Yes, I got mostly positive response. I've gotten about two negative responses, just saying, a lot of it deals with what is meant by standards. Some of the instructors were upset that even though students were failing the course, they were being put back in sooner than they were allowed to be put back in, or even just put back in at all when they shouldn't have been. They should have gone to, an overseas assignment, dictated by the rules and policies. There's a difference in what the standards should be. There's a difference in what standards mean. I think when proponents or supporters of Sontag, which there have been one or two, have said, the standards haven't changed. The course has changed for good reason. We don't need to break these guys down. We want to train them up. That's their argument. But I've received many more emails saying thank you for bringing this to light. I had a guy this morning. He said that he tried to take his. He's a retired guy, claiming that you know, his special forces tab was looked at too. And he said even with retired guys, there's fear of speaking out because of that retaliation. And so far, it's much more support than the negative feedback, but it's a really heated debate. So there's people passionate on both sides.
Well, certainly an important one when we look at the key leadership in our nation's military, especially when we look at the special forces as more and more our country is relying upon them. Christina Wong, thank you so much for joining us. Great piece, and appreciate you covering
that. Thank you.
All right, that's Christina Wong with Breitbart. You can find out more you can read the article. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, this is something that we've seen now, a progression of this. Successive cases of this where general officers, what's come to our attention, they've gone after chaplains, people of faith. And then as they've gotten scrutiny, we find out there's problems there. Now, these are a lot of the leaders that were promoted during the Obama years that were a part of kind of that politically correct agenda, that hostility toward religion, traditional values. Quite significant. Joining me now to talk more about this is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, 36 and a half years in the United States Army, most of that with Special Operations. General, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Any surprises here?
No. You know, this is a command that I had when I was in the military, and it's a special place, and this is a special issue for me. What I think this reporter has done is a marvelous job of capturing the essence of what's going on there. And I will tell you, Tony, based on what – if everything that she has in that article turns out to be true, I think that this guy Sontag could see the inside of a courtroom. Now, that said – You, at your direction, as a matter of fact, we sponsored a letter that went to the Inspector General there at Fort Bragg, along with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of the Army, asking that they look into this whole situation with Chaplain Squires, because the investigator himself there, a major, literally lied on that investigation. Now, I have reason to believe, because of some information that I got yesterday unexpectedly, that as they got into investigating this, and to Fort Bragg's credit, they took this very seriously. But I understand that as they got into investigating this, it then kind of led to some things that they didn't expect to find. And I think that this is all coming together now. And I think that General Sontag has got a huge problem on his hands.
Well, we're out of time, but I know we're going to return to this issue in the future. But bottom line, what I take away from this is not the first time we've seen this. And right. You get these guys who go after people of faith.
Right.
And what happens, the table is turned, because when scrutiny is brought to them, there's usually something behind the curtain they don't want seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the message out there for those officers in the military who have a beef with chaplains or with others, you better make sure you are squeaky clean, because you may be joining the ranks of the retired.
This is not the Obama administration.
Yeah.
He is not the commander-in-chief anymore. We have a guy that actually cares about religious liberty now.
General, thanks so much for stopping
you.
By. You can go back to the gym now. All right, folks, don't go away. Coming back with a look at the Trump budget next. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the Trump administration has rolled out their third budget. Now, the media has attacked it, saying it's fueling the national debt, while Democrats in Congress say it's debt on arrival because it cuts too much. So, which is it? Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas joins us. He is the leader of the Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health, and they took a deep dive today on the Department of Health and Human Services portion of the budget, which is one of the largest. In fact, Secretary Alex Azar appeared before their subcommittee. Congressman Burgess, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on. Yes, we just got out of that hearing with Secretary Azar. Poor fellow had been sitting in the chair since high noon, and now it's, a little bit after 5 o'clock. So he put a long day in with some really serious attempts to grill him from, from both sides, but predominantly on the Democratic side, because anything they can do to discredit the agency and subsequently the president, that's what their game plan is.
Well, let's start with the micro and go to the macro. Let's start with where you spent a good bit of your time today with the budget of Health and Human Services, which is one of the largest. I mean, next to the Department of Defense. I mean, it's a huge amount of the federal spending. What's it look like?
Well, Secretary Azar, I think, correctly pointed out that the Trump administration has produced a budget that, yes, it does have some reductions in spending that are required reductions in spending because of the Budget Control Act that was signed into law by President Obama back in July of 2011. So these mandatory budgetary caps or rollbacks are part of the law that President Obama asked Congress to pass to increase the debt limit back in 2011. Everyone forgets that now. Certainly every Democrat on the committee seems to have forgotten that. On the other hand, there were some important policy priorities that the administration has identified, and I think the Secretary did a good job of defending where the budget is. And, look, everyone knows the president's budget is the president proposes and the Congress disposes. So the president puts out the aspirational document of the administration. The House is then required to put out its own version of an aspirational document, usually reflective of the majority party, and then vote on it on the floor. What I'm hearing is that the House will not do a budget this year because the process in their committee is just too contentious amongst themselves. I mean, you know, you've heard about the Green New Deal and the single-payer, one-size-fits-all health care plan that they want to include in their budgetary hearings, and I don't know if they have the votes on their own side to pass a budget. And I will tell you, you don't want to bring, as a majority party, you don't want to bring a budget to the floor and then have it fail. That's always a bad sign for your hold on power. The president's budget sometimes will be introduced by a member, and whether or not it gets any votes depends upon how people feel about the president's budget. Interestingly, President Obama's budget was placed before the House by Mick Mulvaney several years ago when he was still a House member, and President Obama's budget that he proposed to Congress got zero votes. It didn't get a single, it didn't attract a single Democrat. So this budget, the president is required to post a budget, and he has met that requirement, and he has put his budget forward. People want to be critical because they say it spends too much, it doesn't spend enough. That's always the beef on a budget. I mean, there's always a reason to vote against a budget because it spends too much or it doesn't spend enough. It's one of the easier no votes you can cast as a member of Congress.
Well, the confusion with the Democrats actually could be a good thing for the Republicans, given especially in the House where they're in the minority, because I can imagine that a Democratic budget would be far removed from what the president has proposed in terms of spending limits. So I think probably most likely the path forward are continuing resolutions, meaning keeping existing spending levels and policy riders in place, if the Republicans will hold fast and not negotiate away those spending limits and those policy riders.
So that's the big question. Look, a continuing resolution, many people would argue that's not a good news phenomenon. We spent a lot of money in the HHS budget in last September when it was passed, a lot of money in the defense budget. Secretary Mattis asked for $716 billion, and we provided him the dollars that he said he needed. So a continuing resolution would just be to simply re-up those amounts of money. So that was fairly significant, fairly generous as far as the Department of Health and Human Services was concerned, and certainly as far as the Department of Defense is concerned. However, if you're unable to pass a budget and unable to set the 302 allocations that the budget will, the top level of spending that the budget assigns, then I think the Democrats are left with continuing resolutions. And you're right. We need to be sure that we hold fast on that. I know a lot of people didn't like the Homeland Security appropriation
right.
that the president eventually signed. He did get, $1.4 billion for a wall. A continuing resolution will give him another $1.4 billion at the end of September. So in some ways, that could be seen as a positive sign for the president who's actually earnestly trying to provide us some protection on our southern border, and I believe it is an emergency.
Yeah, and I know this is important to you, Dr. Burgess, but also those pro-life riders that are on many of the spending provisions would stay in place with a continuing resolution, which given this Congress majority in Congress that is even refusing to take a stand against infanticide, that's quite a positive in my view.
Yeah, it is, and just as an aside, I'm leading the amicus brief for trying to permit a state like Texas to not have to sign up Planned Parenthood in its Medicaid program if it doesn't want to. Obviously, you know that's been challenged in the courts,
right.
But it's being heard in the Fifth Circuit. That's maybe a positive for Texas. We'll see.
Well, Dr. Michael Burgess, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to have you on the program.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for being flexible with me this afternoon.
Oh, no, not a problem. Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to go back to what we were talking about yesterday socialism. Some of you didn't get a weigh in on that conversation, and I'm going to give you the opportunity this afternoon as we talk more about this infatuation that some younger Americans have with socialism. So that's coming up next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right. Millennials seem to be eating up the socialist rantings of their new Pied Piper. Her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's the 29-year-old Democrat socialist congresswoman from New York who was mentored by none other than the Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Now, this past Saturday, she sat down for an hour-long interview on stage at the South by Southwest Music Festival, which was held in Austin, Texas, in front of hundreds of attendees. Now, I pulled a couple of quotes. I played some of them yesterday. I want to play a couple more. And I want to continue to have this conversation about socialism, what it is, what it isn't. But first, let's just start with her definition of capitalism and socialism. Let's start with clip number one.
What does capitalism mean? What does socialism mean, et cetera? For me, when I think about what those definitions are. Capitalism, to me, it's an ideology of capital. The most important thing is the concentration of capital, and it means that we seek and prioritize profit and the accumulation of money above all else, and we seek it at any human and environmental cost. That is what that means. And to me, that ideology is not sustainable and cannot be redeemed.
All right, let's start with that. Now, that is not what a classic definition of capitalism means. But let me just say, I think capitalism has been corrupted. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, as we lose our biblical foundation with our understanding, our shared understanding of transcendent truth, capitalism becomes unrestrained. Now, I think I referenced this yesterday, John Adams, in referring to our system of government, constitutional republic, he said that our laws are made for a moral and religious people. They are wholly inadequate for the government of any other. And so there was this understanding from the very start that both our political system, as well as which is the foundation for capitalism as well, and a free society, that it has to be, there has to be self-government, there has to be self-restraint. In other words, you know, we don't have government big enough to keep you from cheating your neighbor or cheating the guy down the street that you're doing business with. And unfortunately, in the last 50 years, as we have driven God and the concept of transcendent truth, and we've moved into this postmodern world of moral relativity where everything's relative and justifiable, and your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth, and there is no universal truth, then, yeah, capitalism begins to it's corrupted. But that doesn't mean that socialism is a better system. I mean, when you look at the effects of socialism in the 20th century, socialism and communism led to the deaths of more people than anything else in terms of form of government. Now, they would say, well, we're not talking about pure socialism. We're talking about democratic socialist government. Well, let's listen to clip number two.
When we talk about ideas, for example, like democratic socialism, it means putting democracy and society first instead of capital first. It doesn't mean that you put other things last. It doesn't mean that the actual concept of capital as a society is should be abolished, but it's a question of our priorities.
And it is. It is a question of priorities. Now, again, I fully admit that in our corrupted capitalist system, capitalism is not the problem. It is the corruption we've allowed in because of corrupt business practices, corrupt dealings, corrupt government, because we've lost the moral foundation. I would say, yes, the priorities are out of whack because we've moved away from an understanding of biblical economics. You know, the Bible speaks to economic issues. In fact, the Bible speaks more about money than almost anything else. I mean, it has a lot to say about money. And in a biblical, when you consider biblical economics, which are the laws that we govern ourselves by, which John Adams made reference to, that makes our system work, the Bible speaks very clearly to these economic relationships. First, we have to recognize, where does wealth come from? Well, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18 makes very clear that wealth comes from God. It says, "And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he has sworn to your fathers, as it is this day." What's the purpose of wealth? Well, the Bible speaks to that as well. Genesis chapter 12, verse 2, it is to bless others. In Psalm 67, talks about how it is to advance the kingdom and purposes of God. I'm going to continue this, and then we're going to open up the phone lines here on the other side of the break. And what we're going to talk about is, well, I'm going to put the question to you when we come back. So don't go away. We're going to come back, and I'm going to continue this discussion on socialism, capitalism, biblical economics, and where America is headed. And you're going to help answer that question. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. you'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. Visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. Right there, you can get the Stand Firm app. You can follow the links over. That way, wherever you go, you'll have Washington Watch with you. You'll also have a host of other important tools in your pocket, like knowing exactly when to contact your members of Congress on important issues and what to say to them. So download the Stand Firm app. Also, while you're at the website, check out the End Birthday Abortion campaign that we're doing here at the Family Research Council. Okay. All right. I'm gonna wrap up my discussion. We're going to go to the phones. And here's what I'm going to put the same question out that I put out yesterday that we weren't able to get to all the calls. So I'm going to ask you to be succinct so I can get to as many callers as possible. But this is based upon a Harris poll that was conducted a couple of weeks ago. And it says, the word socialism does not carry the same stigma it did in the past. Now that it has been resurrected by celebrity politicians like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, what does socialism mean to you? So what does socialism mean to you? That's the question. Now, I was very pleased yesterday. We had a number of younger listeners, and by the way, you get lost in these terms, boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z. So I'm going to give you kind of the rundown of these different generations, which kind of baffled me that we've got so many different ones. But most everybody knows boomers, roughly 1944, being born between 1944 and 1964. I barely made it in. Then you got the Gen X, that's 1965 to 1979, being born in that period. Millennials, which you hear so much about, 1981 to 1996, born in that range. And then you got the Gen Zers. I don't know what comes next, but anyway. So love to hear from the millennials, Gen Zers, anybody can call in. But especially those, it was interesting yesterday. One of the callers talking about how, you know, that socialism sounded good in school, but when they got out and had to go to work, it wasn't quite as appealing. yeah, kind of happens that way. I've got another clip here that I want to play of AOC. I'm going to play clip number 9.
We've strayed so far away from what has really made us powerful and just and good and equitable and productive. And so I think all of these things sound radical compared to where we are, but where we are is not a good thing. And this idea of like 10% better from garbage shouldn't be what we settle for.
All right, this may shock you. I agree 100% with that. We are not where we should be, and we shouldn't settle for this, but I don't subscribe to her prescription. I don't think jettisoning a free market capitalist system that has made America the envy of the world to replace it with a Venezuela, a Cuba, you know, socialist, communist, whatever you want to call it, economy, planned economy or transitional economy is not the way to go. What I think we do need, we've lost our way, we need to return to that moral foundation. One of the things that's very clear in Scripture, in fact, it's really the only specific thing government is to do when it comes to the economy, and you see it throughout, it's a reference to just weights and standards. It's a just economic system. Now, the government has been one of the biggest abusers of this in terms of inflationary policies, inflating the monetary, using the monetary system, printing more money, which devalues the dollars that are in your pocket. I don't want to get into a long discussion about that. But the government has lost its way, and this debt-fueled spending is what is undercutting America's just economic system, in part. The other part, as I made reference to earlier, is the fact that we've jettisoned all moral standards. And when transcendent truth is no longer accepted, then it's anything goes. And it's survival of the fittest. Okay. So this poll question, which was put to millennials, showed that young Americans are embracing socialism. Now, we've talked about this in previous weeks, that the definition, they're off a little bit when it comes to it's a term that has become very elastic. But the policies that they're pursuing, for instance, millennials and Gen Z, 73% believe the government should provide universal health care. I mean, it's certainly socialist in its approach, its policy. Government should provide tuition-free college, 67% believe that. Prefer living in a socialist country, 49%. You know, half of them have some sense. Support abolishing ICE, 43%. You know, of course, when they get out and they go to work and they realize that somebody has to pay the price for these things, and it would be them, then they're not so crazy about it. But anyway, here's the phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. What does socialism mean to you? Let's go to Charlene in Lincoln, Nebraska. Charlene, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, and thanks for all FRC does for our nation. About 60 years ago, and I don't remember what grade or anything anymore, but we learned the difference between capitalism, socialism, and communism. And what we learned was if a family had 3 cows, under socialism, the government would take one, they would give one away, and then you would have one. Under communism, the government would just take them all. And under capitalism, the owner would sell one cow and buy a bull and have the other 2 cows yet.
That's exactly right. I've heard that illustration before. In fact, in capitalism, once you buy the bull, you have a lot more cows.
Yes.
So it's a little humorous, but it's actually very reflective of those systems of government. And again, I don't think we should be making any apologies for the fact that America is not only the envy of the world, but America, look who responds when the world hurts. I mean, who is working right now to try to bring aid to the people in Venezuela? By the way, I don't know if you we talked about this yesterday, but in Venezuela now, the U.S. has pulled out all of its diplomatic and all of its embassy personnel because the situation has gotten so bad that people are having to try to get sewage water to drink. I mean, they don't have food, they don't have water. This is a socialist government. This is a time, Charlene, you talk about wanting to educate young people about socialism and capitalism. Just point them south to Venezuela and look at the dire situation that those people are in, but then also look at who's lining up to help them.
Right.
The United States of America.
It is. Yes, we are.
So, Charlene, thanks so much. Yes, we should.
Yes, thank you.
And that's one of the reasons of wealth. God gives people wealth in order to bless others. Now, if you become a, you know, to hoard it, and I know individuals do that, you become controlled by what you have. But if you're a nation, and I think it's one of the reasons, quite frankly, it's been somewhat twisted and perverted, but I think America's government-run welfare policies, again, I do not support our runaway welfare spending. I think it should be the role of the families, then the church. But I think America's generosity is one of the things that's bought us more time as a country because God has, you know, given us and we give. And it's just a biblical principle that applies to all people. That as you give, you're entrusted more. And again, we haven't done it well, but America is a very generous country. In fact, there's a book, I've made reference to it many times before, called Who Really Cares? And it really goes into detail about giving in America. And Americans are generous. They're very generous, not just here in America, but literally around the world. All right, let's go to Karen in Oklahoma City. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you very much, Tony. I just wanted to tell people that years ago I read the book Atlas Shrugged, and it is a very long book, but there was a chapter in it that describes exactly what happens step by step by step in the socialist process and how everything just comes apart at the seams.
Yes.
And I'd recommend people read it.
All right. Thank you for that, Karen. That's Atlas Shrugs. By the way, the author of the book I was making reference to, Who Really Cares, Arthur Brooks. He's been over at AEI for the last few years, but soon leaving. Karen, thanks so much for that call, and thanks for listening. All right. I'm going to go to Richmond, Virginia. And we've got someone who says they lived under socialism in Ethiopia. Is it Almaz? Almaz?
Yes, yes.
Welcome.
Hi, Tony. It's nice talking to you.
Well, thank you for calling in. So what do you think? What's socialism to you?
Socialism is horrible. And I should say, Ocasio, OSE, she doesn't know what she's talking about. My suggestion for her and for the millennials is to pack up and go to Cuba or China or even Russia and experience it themselves, wherever socialism is, for about 5 years and then come back to tell us how wonderful it is. But
Almaz, let me ask you a question. How long have you been in the United States?
I have been here since 1984. I had to run away from in that time military dictatorship that invited the USSR to our country. The USSR came with Cubans. Cubans always followed wherever they went. And they just wreaked havoc in our country. And my own father was a businessman. And he was killed by a socialist appraiser uprising demonstrations. In those days, they were pointing out people who had business, who were doing well, just telling them they are the enemy of the country, the exploiters, just like what they are saying now here and what Obama used to say when he was the president. And he was literally the enemy for those people who didn't know him, and they killed him so brutally with machetes. He was a very generous person who helped a lot of people. He was not a selfish businessman.
Let me ask you this, Almaz. Why did you come to the United States?
Number one, I finished my undergrad degree and wanted to pursue doing my master's. And that's how I came. And also, I had the opportunity to leave the country because I was working in the British Embassy. So I was not restrained from leaving the country. So I wanted to escape because I had the opportunity. But there were so many people who didn't know, who didn't have my kind of opportunity. So they walked out of they tried to walk out of the country through the Somali border, through the Kenya, through any border they could, and many of them died on the way, and some of them made it. So it is horrible. It's socialism is not to be desired. When the king had a great relationship with the United States, Ethiopia had a great relationship with the United States. And when the military dictatorship came, they accepted USSR's socialism, they invited the USSR and drove out the Americans. And even the people were saying, I have a brother who used to make a joke saying, well, the Americans, even their trash was a blessing for us. But wow. Now these Russians, the USSR, came and literally we don't have anything. They just took they were taking everything, and we were already rationed. You have to wait for a long line to buy sugar, oil, very important things for you to live.
Yeah, and that's in almost
places where they organized.
Right. Almaz, we're up against the end of the program. I hate to cut you off, but I do want to thank you for calling, and I want to encourage you to tell your story to more people, especially now. In fact, there are many Americans that are here. In fact, we may do this tomorrow. Just spread the word. Those that have come from socialist, communist countries, I want you to call in and tell your story, because I don't think enough of that is heard. I've had the benefit of talking to a lot of folks from these different countries who come to America because America is a beacon of hope. It's a place of freedom. All right, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to encourage you to tune in again tomorrow. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you could do when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.